Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India.
I don't know, Sadhvi Ma, whether I'd be able to present my question in the right form or not, but I think you'll understand it.
Just speak from your heart.
Being born in Indian family, on the pretext of caring, our thought, our actions, everything get controlled by the family members. After a certain age, when you become empowered, you react and you want to be what you want to. Now, in that reaction, you do things and, you know, in the rightiest form you do because you have been brought up like that, but a guilt comes that you have hurt the family members. You really don't know how to move ahead. You're always in dilemma whether you're moving on the right path or not. The family members are getting hurt, but you want to pursue the kind of life you want to. I really want to know, how should one go about it?
So it's a very common, very deep and very, very important dilemma. And it's not only, of course, for those from an Indian family, although there tends to be, I think, in some cultures, and Indian is not the only one, but perhaps more of an expectation that we will do exactly what our family members want. And the dilemma with that, of course, is that unless you are blessed in such a way that you were brought into the world, into a family of people who were enlightened, that like you were the son or the daughter of a rishis, sages, unless that was your situation, Your family members, even though in most cases their hearts are in the right place, they love you, they want good things for you, nonetheless, they are moving through the world also with their own package of ignorance, of fear, of ego, of desires. Just because they are our family, just because we love them, does not render them unimpacted or unaffected by the pulls of their own karmic drama. And the dilemma of that is that we end up then getting pulled in to their karmic drama. So meaning, for example, let's say that I grew up in a family that didn't have much money. I always felt like we didn't have enough. Maybe I was teased at school for not having enough. Okay, I grow up. I marry a very successful man. I become very successful. I make a lot of money. He makes a lot of money. Now we have a beautiful mansion home, we have lots of cars, now we have children. Now, after sending our children to the best schools, using our money to give them the best education and tennis classes and ice skating classes and this class and horseback riding classes and art lessons and music lessons and special summer camps and this and that. My child tells me that he or she wants to be something that in my mind is not the right outcome of the upbringing we've given them. Maybe in my mind, the right outcome is a doctor, an engineer, a business person, right? I mean, this is what people who have a good education, all sorts of resources, this is what we do. We become doctors, we become CEOs, we become engineers, we become lawyers, we become these very, very well-paid professionals. But maybe my child says, I want to be a school teacher. Noble profession, essential profession, not a very high paying one. Not one that necessarily, tragically, in our society is given the type of acclaim that it should have. We should bow down and touch the feet of school teachers. But it's not typically how it happens. So maybe my child says, I want to be a school teacher. I want to teach kindergarten. So I'm not even going to be a college professor. I'm going to teach kindergarten. Now, what happens? My whole history, all of my complexes that I had when I was growing up of not having enough, not being enough, not feeling confident in myself, that I've basically numbed myself of through a life of making money and succeeding, and now I have all the things. Suddenly, all of that comes back. Suddenly, I say to my child, no, how dare you? You couldn't. It'll, after everything we've given you. Now I'm reacting. And the dilemma is that although I love my child, and although at the corest, highest level, yes, of course, I want them to be happy. But unless I've really done a lot of psychological work, unless I've really faced and worked with and overcome all of the identities and complexes that I had in my childhood, I'm not going to be able to support my child in their path without my own agenda and complexes and issues coming in. And this is what happens in families. And then, of course, I make my child feel guilty. I've worked so hard to give you the education I've given you. The least you can do, for God's sakes, is become a doctor. What will the neighbors say? Besti ho jayega. Lo kya sochenge? What will people think? We'll be so embarrassed. Everybody else's children are becoming doctors. And I'm not responding to my child from a place of truth and love. I'm coming at it from a place of my own complexes. And this is a dilemma because we love our family, and especially in Indian culture, that obedience and service and surrender to the wishes of the family is seen as such a high tenet. The dilemma becomes when our family, they're human, and they're human with their own issues, and they're human with their own agendas. And us simply giving in, not fulfilling our real dharma, just because that brings up too much anxiety for one of my family members or pushes the button of a family member, isn't according to the agenda that a family member had. Well, that doesn't serve either me or them. Because remember that their highest goal in life on a deep spiritual level is not to browbeat everybody into doing what I want. If every time people don't obey me, it makes me very upset. My highest goal in life should not be to figure out how to get everybody to obey me, because that doesn't actually give me the ability to work through that ignorance. It doesn't give me the ability to work through that fear, that anxiety, that identity, that construct. Actually, the highest thing you could do for me, with love, with respect, with caring, with humility, is to embody your truth in such a way that it actually creates the space for me to embody mine. And that's the best of what we can do for our family members. In the short run, in the Band-Aid approach, yes, whatever they want, do it. Everybody will be happy. But then we simply live our lives with our highest goal being people-pleasing. But it's not actually even serving them, because all you're doing is putting a Band-Aid over their agendas, over their complexes, over their fears, over their egos, over their issues. A much greater service is to live your truth, even if it's not exactly what they want, but to do it with such love and such humility and such clarity. Because the other thing that happens a lot is we do the exact opposite of what people in our family want, not because it's our dharma to do that, but just because I'm not going to do what they say. Hell with them. They can't tell me what to do. They can't run my life. I won't do what they want. Now, the dilemma with that is I'm actually just as much under their thumb if I do exactly what they want, as if I do the opposite of what they want, just because it's the opposite of what they want. Either way, my actions are being determined by what they want. In both cases, I'm a slave. And so we have to be careful also, because there's a tendency toward rebellion that is, oh, you want me to be a doctor? I'll show you. And even if on a core level, I love science and I love the idea of being a doctor, but that instinct in me that says, you can't tell me what to do, pushes me to say, I'm going to teach kindergarten instead. Hell with you. And that actually is just as damaging, even more damaging, than doing something that isn't really my dharma just because it's what they want me to do. Freedom is I'm making my decisions in truth, in love, and of course taking you into consideration. You at your highest level, not you on your identity of anxiety or your identity of this agenda. And that takes courage. And it takes also the ability to really love, even in the face of someone telling you, you're making a wrong decision, how dare you, you're selfish, you're this, you're that, to just be able to be grounded in love and truth, knowing that what you are doing is exactly the right decision, and that actually it's going to give that person the opportunity to come into their truth and into their love, because in being forced to let go of that agenda that they have, that they've created out of their own karmic history, you're actually helping free them of their own ignorance. You're helping free them of their own sense of, oh my God, what will the neighbor say if you're not a doctor? And it's a beautiful experience, but it has to be done in humility and really ensuring that you're grounded in truth and that you're not running away. So it's not, they want me to be a doctor. I really know I should be a doctor, but I hate math class. I hate science class. It's too hard. I'm not good enough at it. I hate the guy sitting next to me. And so in running away, I end up missing the opportunity to actually do what I was supposed to do. So make sure that that which you think is really what's right for you is really what's right for you. Not in a what's easy for you, not in a what's pleasant for you. The example I always give about this is Arjuna. The Bhagavad Gita is the answer for everything. And you think about the teachings that Lord Krishna gave Arjuna when he was having him stand up and fight this battle. Wasn't what Arjuna wanted to do. It wasn't enjoyable. It wasn't glamorous. It wasn't romantic. It wasn't easy. It basically killed him on the inside. But it was what he needed to do. It was his dharma. And so it's important to remember that when we really are talking about I need to follow what is right for me, that it's not what is easy for me. It's not what sounds like fun. It's not what's glamorous. It's not what's romantic. It's not what's going to put my picture on the front cover of a magazine. It's not what's going to make everybody like me. But it's really rooted in what's right for me. And if it is, the truth is a magnet. And even your family members will feel that. It's what I experienced when I came to India, when I made this decision to be here. Incredibly difficult at the beginning. But slowly, slowly, if you just live your truth, not trying to shove it down other people's throats, not trying to convince them, but just grounded in your love, your truth, your openness. The truth is a magnet. And slowly, 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 they'll be pulled toward it.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
How can you forget the hurt that has been caused to you by others?
it's not so much a matter of forgetting. It's a matter of letting go of the emotional component of the memory. And there are two very different things. When someone says, oh, forget it, let it go. Forget it and let it go actually are two completely different things. That which happens to us, it happens for a reason. Nothing in life is random. Whether you look at it from the perspective of a divine God, a divine planner, or you look at it from this perspective of the laws of karma and destiny, whether you look at it from the perspective of action and reaction, however we look at it, whether you look at it from the perspective of the laws of nature, nothing is random. That which happens to us happens for a reason. And the teachings of karma and destiny and our whole spiritual evolution are very, very clear on the idea that that which we get for two reasons. Number one, we get it because it is the fruit of a seed that either we planted or we permitted someone else to plant in our front yard. So if you discover that you've got a garden full of oranges, you look up and there's an orange tree. Well, it's because at some point in the past, either you planted an orange seed or you let someone else plant an orange seed in your garden. Those are the only two explanations for having a garden full of oranges and a tree that's producing them in your yard. But there's another reason that we get what we get. Because the universe doesn't operate just on a very superficial level of seeds and fruit. The law of nature is rooted in that which you plant, it grows, it has a season. But the laws of spiritual nature, the laws of karma, the laws of reincarnation and destiny have another much deeper element to them, which is the actual agenda of the universe, that we should wake up. That's actually why we're here. And so we're not just like leaves in a river that sort of whichever way the river blows, we go. It's not just a matter of what seeds are planted. There's a force at work that is much deeper than that. And that's a force in which our entire existence, the whole reason we took birth as a human, was so we could wake up. When we talk about a human birth as the pinnacle of evolution, the highest point of evolution. Well, physical evolution depends on which way you look at it. We're certainly not the fastest or the strongest, or if you look at it simply from our cerebral cortex, okay, we have the most developed cerebral cortex, but one could certainly argue whether we were actually the pinnacle of physical evolution. We're certainly not the pinnacle of moral and ethical evolution. Everything in nature is actually more moral and ethical than we are. Even animals like lions and tigers, they only harm if they're being directly threatened or if they need food. We're probably the only species that actually harms when our life isn't just in danger or because we need food. So one could definitely argue whether we are the pinnacle of physical evolution or moral, ethical evolution. The reason that it is said that we are the pinnacle of spiritual evolution is for one reason and one reason only. We are the only species that we know of that has the ability to look at itself, to be conscious of its own consciousness. And because of that, we are the only species that is believed that actually has the capacity for enlightenment. Because enlightenment requires the ability to look at oneself and say, I'm not the thoughts. I'm not the thinker of the thoughts. I'm not the emotions. I'm not the haver of the emotions. I'm not the physical body. I'm not its desires. I'm not its history. I'm not its yearning. The rest of nature just kind of acts. A dog never stops and says, is this really a dog-like thing to do? Is this in the highest service of my dogness? It just does what dogs do. We're the only species that actually has that sense of stopping and saying, okay, wait. Is there an alternative way of reacting here? So here's what I've always done. I know where that leads me. It leads me to misery. It leads me to depression. It leads me to anxiety. It leads me to bad consequences. Is there another alternative way of being? Is there another alternative way of thinking? Can I get into what's called the witness state and actually be not the doer, but the one who's witnessing the doing? Can I go even deeper and witness the witness? And that's the practice through which we have the possibility of awakening. And this is important because when we talk about our lives and we talk about what we get, that which we get is in line with our karmic seeds, but it's also in line with the universe's very clear agenda that we should wake up, that we should use the tools we've been given and use them to wake up. And so that which we get is also that which is most conducive for us to take the next step in our awakening. So it's sickness. It's health, it's wealth, it's poverty, it's failure, it's success, it's opportunity, it's lack of opportunity. Whatever it may be, it's been given to us because it's in that situation, with a gold spoon in our mouth, with a silver spoon in our mouth, with no spoon in our mouth and no food in our mouth, or anywhere else along the spectrum. That's the situation that is actually the most conducive for our particular next step. And so when you look at getting over the hurt of people who have hurt you, forgetting it, first part is it's not about forgetting. But the second part is it's about recognizing that that which I've gotten has not been given to me just so I can forget it. It's been given to me for a reason. There's a lesson I'm supposed to learn here. And so if I've been hurt by someone, yes, I need to let it go. I need to let the hurt go because the hurt is a virus. That hurt is literally eating me alive. That hurt is ruining my brain. Every time I close my eyes, every time there's a moment of silence, every time I'm alone, all I can think about is what that person did to me. So it's this virus that takes over my brain. How did they do it? Why did they do it? That's not fair. So it's a virus in my brain. It becomes a virus in my body. Because that holding on to hurt, that grudge, that anger, that pain, actually ends up wreaking havoc in our immune systems, in our digestive systems, in our reproductive systems, in every aspect of the body that needs to flow freely. You've literally taken a cork and stuck it in to the vessel of you, through which the divine is supposed to be flowing, but that anger, that pain, that grudge has literally gone like that. Nothing can flow now. And so we let go, because if we don't let go, we continue to suffer. But we don't forget, because forgetting implies that I'm throwing the lesson out. There's always a lesson in getting hurt. Maybe we can avoid that situation in the future. Maybe we can prevent it, protect ourselves in some way. Or maybe the lesson is simply to learn how to let something go. Someone stole something of ours, a physical item. Maybe they stole our reputation. Maybe they did something that humiliated us. Whatever it is that they stole, maybe the lesson there is to learn how to let it go. Who am I without that jacket that they said they were only borrowing and then claimed they never borrowed and I know is in their closet? Or who would I be without that ijut, that reputation that I thought I had that was so important before I was humiliated? Who would I be without that attachment to that success or that title or that role or that relationship or whatever it is that they stole from me? Because again, remember, there's a lesson. We're not operating in a vacuum. So hold the lesson, but let go of the emotional charge. So that if you think about what happened, you can still distill the lesson, you can still keep learning, because a lot of times when things happen in our life, we learn one lesson in the moment. The lesson of that moment may be, I can't trust that person. But as the days go by, as the weeks go by, as the years go by, a lot of times we find we learn so much more. Most people I know are actually deeply, deeply grateful, myself included, for the pain that I've gone through in my life. I'm actually deeply grateful for the way that I've been hurt, because it has taught me so much. Not in a jaded way of, oh yeah, I've learned you can't trust anybody. Not that. That's not actually a lesson. That's a defense mechanism. It's called denial. Very different from actually learning a lesson. But what you learn is about yourself. What you learn is about an inner strength. What you learn about is what you thought you were attached to, what you thought you needed, who you thought you were. And you get taken to a deeper level. So don't try to forget the hurt that someone did to you. Let go of the emotional attachment to it. Hold the lesson and move on. Because otherwise we become a festering wound. And what it does is, it's really a tragic irony. Say you're 30 years old. And say for 30 years, of course, you've had your share of ups and downs, but there have been so many people in your life who have just supported you and loved you and cared for you in such ways, from your family to friends to neighbors to colleagues to so many people who have loved you and been there for you and supported you. And one guy or one lady does something that really hurts you, and now you are miserable. you can't eat, you can't sleep, you take to drugs and alcohol, you decide, forget it, I'm going to not do what I was doing in the world because it's not worth it, you just get hurt. Now think about what that looks like to all the people who have loved you and supported you and cared for you and been there for you all the years of your life. Like somehow one rascal, one person who in their own suffering, in their own pain, in their own confusion, couldn't treat you with the love or the care or the compassion or the patience that was required at that time. And suddenly, that outweighs everything else that has happened in your life, and now you're ready to be depressed, to give up, to turn to drugs. Really? What does that say about everybody else in your life? And so we realize, out of love and care and value and respect for all of the other people who have treated us with love and compassion and respect, you can't let that one person or one act dictate now how you move through the world. It's an absolute violation, an undermining of everyone else in your life, of everything else that's ever happened in your life. And also what it is it's a way of handing over your freedom to the person who hurt you. So they've already stolen what they stole. Your money, your jacket, your prestige, your job, whatever it may be. They've already done that. Now you're going to take your freedom, your spiritual, emotional, mental freedom to think what you want, to feel what you want. And you're going to hand it to them. They've already shown you they can't be trusted. They couldn't be trusted with your money, your jacket, your job, whatever it was that they've already injured. Why in the world would you take that which is of the highest value in your life, your freedom, to think, to live, to be, to feel, and hand that over to them? But if you live as a victim of what they did, that's exactly what you do. You say, all right, you hurt me once. You stole from me once. I know. I'm going to take everything I've got and I'm going to hand it to you also. Because you showed me that you take such good care of me. Like, what kind of logic is that? But it's what we all do. And so for that reason, out of love for ourselves, our capital S self, out of love for everyone else we've ever interacted with in the world, everyone in our life, we let go and we move on. But you don't have to forget. You hold the lesson, because that's what you're supposed to take from it.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
How do you get the courage? Because you realize that's what matters most in life. I told a story last night, but it's worth repeating, of a student, a disciple with a guru, who says to the guru one day, he says, you know, I've been meditating, praying. I want to experience God. I want to experience God, but my mind just keeps wandering and wandering. And the guru takes him to the river, takes him into the river, holds his head under the water. First, the guy thinks it's a blessing. Water is sacred, right? In all our religions, I'm being blessed. Then he thinks, oh my God, I'm being drowned. And the guru keeps holding the head underwater until literally the guy can't breathe. And he's thrashing around and he literally thinks he's going to drown and die. And finally, at the very last minute before he collapses, the guru pulls him up out of the water. And he comes up. He can't breathe. And the guru says to him, so what were you thinking about down there? And the guy says, thinking about I was going to die? What do you mean thinking about? I was suffocating. And the guru said, did your mind wander? And the man says, of course my mind didn't wander. All I was thinking about was air and life and breathing. And the guru says, when you want God as much as you wanted air, your mind will stop wandering. And I tell the story again because it explains much better than I could without the story. Where that courage comes from, where the discipline comes from, because it's not only a matter of courage, it's also a matter of discipline. There's so much in our lives these days that's pulling us in every direction. I mean, does anyone actually go to sleep at night feeling like, oh, thank God I did everything I needed to do today? How much gets left undone? And that's only like the essentials. Forget all the things I would really like to do if I had time. There's so much pulling us that if you don't make time and make discipline for something, and you just sort of think, well, there will be time, it'll never happen. And so the courage and then the action that comes out of that courage comes from realizing I want this more than I want anything else. If my highest goal in life is to make money, I'm going to jump out of bed every day and rush to the office or get on the stock market or whatever my way of making money is going to be. I'm going to jump out of bed and I'm going to do that because that's my highest goal. And I'm going to stay with those stocks or stay at the office or keep doing whatever I'm doing to make money until my body collapses in the night and I have to go to sleep because that's my priority. If my priority is to get the most number of followers on Facebook that I possibly can imagine, well, I'm going to get out of bed thinking about how can I find more Facebook followers. And I'm going to do that until late at night. Whatever my highest priority is, that's going to pull me out of bed in the morning. It's going to dictate how I live.
It's going to dictate the choices I make. So if someone on the street says to me, a beggar on the street says, can you give me some money? If my highest goal is to have as much money as I can, the answer is no, because what I give you is pulled away from me. But if my highest goal is to be a giving and compassionate person, then even if I don't have much, I'm going to give because giving is in line with my highest goal. So it's all about what do we want more than we want anything else? And if what I want more than I want anything else is that awareness of who I am, that truth, because that is why we are here, then I'm gonna leap with courage. Because I realize I don't have a choice. To not leap would not be in alignment with my truth. Right? I mean, people do things for love all the time that otherwise you would say, well, that's crazy. How do you explain it? Well, it was for love. Okay, we get it. If love of that person is the highest thing in your life, well then, yeah, you do all kinds of things. You take leaps. If your highest goal is connection with God, truth of the self, enlightenment, awakening, you're going to leap. And then you're going to follow up that leap with choices and decisions. And it's not easy. Because we live in a world that is literally pulling us in every direction, that is saying, make money. Get richer. Get thinner. Look younger. I mean, wherever you go, anti-aging this, as though somehow age were the enemy. Here in India, we bow down and touch the feet of our elders. It's age is wisdom. Age is respect, age is reverence. The traditional elders of not just India, but of any indigenous culture of the world, try to sell any of them an anti-aging cream. Try to even get them to use it for free. I mean, could you imagine? Could you imagine going to revered elders of any spiritual tradition? Saying, guess what? You know those wrinkles on your face? I've got the thing for you. They'd look at you like you were nuts. And then they'd put you in their lap. And they'd... Because clearly, the problem was yours. Not their wrinkles. But the point is that we live in such a crazy world. That unless we are fully conscious all the time, it's going to fill our minds with crazy priorities. What's most important to you? Looking young. What's most important? Getting rich. What's most important? Being famous, being popular. We get so brainwashed, so indoctrinated. And so that courage comes from really taking back our lives and saying, hey, wait, I know my priority. My priority is truth. My priority is knowing myself. My priority is being of service. As Pooja Swamiji always says, ask not what for me, but what through me. Life is not about what for me. Life is about what through me. But we are indoctrinated so much, especially in the West, to keep asking, what for me, what for me? I remember being on a plane with Pooja Swamiji 20-something years ago. The first time I was in America with him, and you know, the airlines have magazines in the seat pockets of the seat in front of you, just the airline magazine, and he was flipping through it, and there was some advertisement for an assertiveness training workshop. And he laughed and he said to me, "This is the problem with America." He said, "You people think that the key to life is assertiveness." And of course, on the ad in a big bubble, it had said, "What for you?" with a question mark. Like, learn how to get what for you. He said, "The problem with America is you think the key to life is what for me." He said, "You don't need assertiveness training. You need adaptiveness training." He said, "We need to learn to ask what through me. Because there's this divine will, there's a flow of the universe that's not according to our direction. And our success in life on every level except the most superficial is based on how we align ourselves with the flow of the universe. Are you rowing your boat upstream? Or are you rowing it downstream? How in alignment are you with the will of the divine, with the flow of grace?" And so that courage comes from realizing this is more important to me than everything that I'm currently spending my time and energy on. And lastly, it's more important to me than the comfort that I get in the familiarity of who I think I am. Because when we hold on to something, you have to realize if you're holding on to it, it's serving you. And so I hold on to my fear. I hold on to my pain. I hold on to my grudges. I hold on to my false identity because it is serving me in some way. That may sound crazy. We think, "Oh, but it's just hurting me." Well, maybe the way it's serving is it gives you a wonderful excuse for why you haven't actually stepped up to the plate of your life. Maybe it gives you a wonderful excuse for being a drug addict or for being an alcoholic. Maybe it gives you a wonderful excuse for not being able to be of service in your life, for only being able to focus on taking care of myself. Right? I mean, we all know those people who it's like sort of their whole life is just all I've got to take care of myself. So all of that which we hold on to, it's serving us in some way. And that courage is to say, "I understand this is going to be uncomfortable for a little while. I'm prepared to jump out of my comfort zone." Because a golden cage is a cage nonetheless. A diamond cage is a cage nonetheless. And as beautiful as I've decorated this cage that I'm in, as safe and familiar as it feels, it's a cage. And the point of life is not to decorate our cages, but to get free. And so you take the leap. I'll end with just sharing another one of my very favorite short parables about this, of a man who was holding on to a rope for dear life. Suddenly, an angel's voice comes and says, "Let go." And the man says, "I can't let go. Oh my God, are you the angel of death? You know, if I let go, I'm going to plummet to my death." And the angel says, "No, I'm not the angel of death, but just, if you can't let go with all 10 fingers, let go with one." So he thinks, "All right, her voice is so sweet and soothing," and he lets go with one finger. A little while later, she says, "Let go." Slowly, slowly, this angel gets him to let go with 9 of his 10 fingers. Now he's holding on with only one finger for dear life. And the angel's voice says, "Let go." And he says, "Now I can't. Now you're asking too much. Now I'm really going to plummet to my death." But there's something about this voice of the angel. She convinces him and he lets go. And he doesn't fall at all. And he's shocked. And he looks down and he realizes he's been standing on solid earth the whole time. And I love that parable because so many of us spend our lives holding on for dear life. We have this death grip on life. This death grip on what we think we need, how we think we need it, who we think we are. And that somehow if I let go, I'm going to plummet into the deadly nothingness, the deadly void. But when we finally leap, we realize, oh wait, I've been held the whole time. I'm not hanging on for dear life here. There's actually this incredible energy of the universe that's holding me and supporting me, a wisdom of the universe that flows through me, that knows who I am, that knows what I'm supposed to be doing. Doesn't need me to hold on for dear life. So you let go of that death grip. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.